It's Wednesday, January 21st, 2009, and you're listening to episode 133 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Pat.
My name's Chad.
My name is Chris.
So we just had this long, it had to be at least 20-minute conversation. Before we started recording, this is actually the second take, and we were like, I don't know what to talk about. So Dan stopped recording, and then he was looking something up, and then me, Pat, and Chris just had this really great conversation about creativity and the movie business and direct-to-video movies and why they're actually kind of a good thing, and it was great.
It was.
You got a long way to go. Movies are a good thing.
What? Direct-to-video movies are a good thing? I think that some are good things. I mean, it depends on where your expectations are. I mean, if you're expecting the greatest summer blockbuster movie, you're just not going to get that out of a lot of movies that have a million-dollar budget. But some of them are really, like El Mariachi. That's a direct-to-video movie.
You guys are talking about something
for like $5,000.
A little bit different than that at first.
Well, okay.
It wasn't so much the direct-to-video, although just sticking with that for a moment. There are those who definitely make a ton of money off that. You know, Disney's a perfect example of a company that makes money off of direct-to-video. You know, they strung out the Aladdin series of animated movies for at least, I think, three or four things after the theatrical release that were all direct-to-video.
Yeah, Lilo and Stitch, they only had one movie in the
thing. Yeah, and Land Before Time is another example of that. There's, about 85 Land Before Time movies.
Yeah. And they're all terrible.
To the point where they're almost caught up to present day.
All right, but when this started, you guys were actually talking about scam movies.
I wouldn't call them scam movies.
I would. All right, so
they're
movies for those who don't pay close attention.
Yeah, so you're walking through a video store, and Chris, the example you gave was Snakes on a Train.
Yeah.
So you're walking through Snakes on a Train, the cover looks similar, the font for the title's the exact same, but it's not Snakes on a Plane, it's Snakes on a train.
Yeah.
And so if you're not paying attention, you grab this movie by accident.
There are
you
rent tons it. Of movies like that. Yeah.
But Chris, you were saying that because you're involved in TV and stuff, and you were saying that it's your understanding that's their business model, is they are trying to scam you into renting the wrong movie.
The story I saw is that this company that does this, and it's not just Snakes on a Train, but they do other ones that have similar, like Mission Improbable and other movies like that, you know?
To get it as close to the original material without actually getting sued.
And it's really, when you think about it, it's actually very smart marketing, because for movies that are really big, they'll release their DVD, direct-to-video version of it, as the movie's coming out. So then people are in the stores, and they may see it, and granted, yes, if they're not paying attention, they're going to grab Snakes on a Train, throw out their mom's shopping cart, and get it paid for. And so, A, if they're lucky, the shrink wrap gets broken, so it can't be returned, so you're stuck now, you've already paid the money for it. Or in the case of rentals, you're dealing with the fact that it might be 5 miles to the video store and raining out, you're not going to go back. So, all right, let's throw in Snakes on a Train. Let's see what it's got.
I would never say, let's throw in Snakes on a Train.
Not sober.
But why not? It's not going to be a good low-budget B movie based on the crappiest movie
of that summer.
And it's probably Stanley L. Jackson's shining piece
Stanley
of work.
L. Jackson.
Exactly. Starring Stanley L. Jackson. But there is a market for those. And there are people who love the cheesy movies. They love
I've got a friend who...
Before we get into the people that actually like this stuff, because that's a side conversation. But Chris, to your point, I'm not saying it's not smart. I'm not saying it's not even successful. I'm just saying that like every other scam out there, it's evil, because the basis of your business model is you are trying to get someone to spend money on something they do not want to spend money
on.
They're just
taking the phrase buyer beware to a brand new level.
I think not that I disagree with you here. It is kind of scammy, shady at best, but
absolutely.
I think that,
totally.
If we had one of these guys sitting here right now, I think that they would frame it differently and they'd put a different spin on it. They would say, well, what we're doing is we're marketing this movie based on the hype engine surrounding, like, we'll use Snakes on a Plane as the example. Snakes on a Plane is putting out all these ads and all this stuff and all this, this, that, and the other. And what we're doing is we're going along that wave of trend right now that is reptiles on a conveyance. And we're just really pushing that thing. And you know what we're doing? We're helping their hype engine as much as they're helping ours. And it's like, yeah, you're a slimy shark, aren't you? And he's like,
but you know what, though? But people do fall for it. And, yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm living proof of that. I remember being a kid, Star Wars came out, the biggest thing in the universe as far as any 8 to 10 year old boy was concerned at that point in time. And if anything came out that had lasers or swords that glowed, you had to go see it. And I went and saw in the theater the movie Message from Space. And if you look up some clips on YouTube or just look it up on the internet, this movie, it was a Japanese-made film. Awful. Awful, awful, awful movie. To give you an idea of how bad this movie is, well, first of all, they had laser-like swords. I don't want to call them lightsabers because that's an insult to lightsabers. But one of the other things they had in here was like there was some magical space walnut that would appear in people's drink glasses to let them know that they were special and summoned in some certain way. I kid you not. I remember distinctly the scene where this guy had this little snifter of brandy, and suddenly the brandy started to glow, and you could see this glowing walnut in his glass.
So what you're saying is you knew you were special when you got your space nut.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I like that.
I remember even buying these knockoff action figures, which A, were totally immobile. They had no movable arms or legs. They had the hairstyles.
Inaction figures, as we call them.
They were inaction figures. They were solid plastic, one color only. They had hairstyles akin to 18th century France. but yet they had space-like suits and guns, and it was like, cool, I can add this to help supplement or round out my Star Wars figure collection.
That kind of gives me this idea that, you know, maybe these companies aren't scamming you. If you think about it, like he just said, Star Wars, if you're an 8-year-old kid, man, Star Wars was where it's at. You had to have it. And so you went and saw Star Wars. You went and saw Star Wars 10 times. And then your parents were like, okay, you have kind of enough of Star Wars here. Go watch something else. Well, you got to get your Star Wars fix in there somehow. So what, you go watch Star Warriors now or whatever the knockoff is just to get your fix of the fad.
You go see Battle Beyond the Stars with Richard Thomas, another horrible, horrible movie. And it had John Boy from the Waltons in it. But yet, you go and see it because there's spaceships and there's lasers.
Or you went and saw Logan's Run, which won an Academy Award that year.
See, there you go. Crazy, but it's true. But it's in a certain sense, I applaud their business acumen for, you know, realizing hype that it is and then trying to ride it for as far as they can ride it and then getting off that snake, you know, train before the snakes get there.
So thank you. Scammy low budget to video movie producer.
No, we don't thank you.
That need.
This is like saying, you know what? There was really some brilliance to Madoff's Ponzi scheme. So thank you. You're bringing a service because, you know, maybe people don't want to invest in things like, say, investments. And so he's giving us that great alternative of what we can do with
Madoff
our money.
For his Ponzi scheme because
it's just
you know
like a podcast ripping off Fear the Boot.
I did not know what a Ponzi scheme was until they busted
him. He's an educational service.
He is.
Yeah.
I know what a Ponzi scheme is. It's great.
Thank you, Ponzi scheme playing guy. You're
all
the
right,
real
now, there
scumbag.
There is a different demographic here you mentioned, which is people that actually like this kind of stuff. I remember I was actually just looking at something on, I don't know, it's MySpace or whatever it was, where they were doing tryouts for some, like, basically looking for a new Scream Queen. And there were people that
you applied?
Yeah, I did. I just, you know, I was like, shave a little closer. Nobody can tell.
Can you give a little sample of your screen?
No, I can't. But that's too bad. While I was looking at this, reading some of the profiles of the people that were on there and the directors that were involved, whatever else. And these were people that were intentionally making a career out of doing B movies.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
guess they just enjoy it. I mean, it's. I don't know if they would refuse an opportunity from a bigger show. I don't know if maybe
they're just not going after.
I don't know if maybe they're just lowering their standards, which I'm sure is true in some cases. But reading these profiles, I mean, you got the distinct sense. At least some of these people are genuinely doing what it is they want to do. Similarly, we've known people, Kashner was an example, mm-hmm. who intentionally consume low budget movies.
His thing was zombie and horror movies.
Right.
And those are kind of low budgety to begin with. I mean, occasionally you get like a high budget one, but generally speaking, you know, they're low budget to begin with. And Kashner had to consume, this friend of ours named Kashner, he wanted to consume as a massive amount of this media as he possibly could. His walls floor to ceiling were lined with shelves for DVDs. All of them bookend, packed solid, DVDs falling over, all of them horror,
right,
cheesy movies. And to him, it wasn't a matter of quality. It was a matter of quantity. In fact, the lower the budget, the faster they can get it to him.
Yeah, and I can somewhat understand where he's coming from. I've watched late night USA movies.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't turn off the D&D movie.
No. Well, and
fact, we put in the second one.
You remember.
And kind of what spawned this conversation was Pat's offhanded comment that, you know, this is why the sci-fi, his original comment was the Sci-Fi Channel should stop.
Oh, that was me.
Making that was Dan.
Was it you making? All right, whatever. You guys sound alike to me.
We get those comments a lot.
That Sci-Fi Channel needs to stop making the cheesy cornball movies that they make, but yet at the same time, there's an audience for that. They like that kind of stuff, and it's the place where your Luke Perrys of the world get to go.
Well, and you know, something that we talked about in our first take of this is that it's just like anything else. You got to pay your dues. There's got to be a Bush League somewhere, even for movie making. So you got to start out doing something. It's either this or soap operas or commercials, I guess.
Well, and
James Cameron directed Piranha 2, for goodness sake. You know,
Johnny Depp, his first movie was Friday the 13th.
Was it really?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he played a nobody. He played a guy who got a red shirt, who got killed off real quick.
Wait, wasn't he in Nightmare on Elm Street?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. It's Nightmare on Elm Street. The Freddy Krueger one. Yeah. Yes.
Freddy Krueger.
But it is cyclical, like you're saying, because for there to be that league of movies that employs a lot of, I mean,
yeah,
literally it employs probably more people to do all that stuff than the mainstream, the high dollar movies that are actually done, because there's so many more B movies,
right?
You know, they have to be employed, but for them to be employed and to make it, there has to be a marketplace for it. And so there is it. So it's kind of an interesting thing that people demand it. And because they demand it, there is work for these people to do. And you're right. It is sort of like the Bush leagues of things. They'll start there, or they can't be in the big blockbuster movies, so they get these jobs because that's what they can find.
Yeah, a minor league baseball game is not going to fill up a major league stadium, but
they hope they get noticed.
Yeah, there's still.
But honestly, if I had my choice, I'd go watch a minor league team before I'd watch a major league team, only because of the fact that for me, at least when it concerns baseball, there's something a bit more pure about a minor league team.
Well, see, I feel the same way about boxing, that if I'm going to watch a boxing match, I'm not interested in watching the big heavyweight title matches because they're so commercialized, oftentimes so rigged, where if you go watch a lighter weight class where there's less money, you might get a cleaner fight.
And people say that all the time about, like, the hardcore sports fans prefer college basketball to professional basketball because college basketball is more real, whereas professional basketball is money.
All right, but without getting into
what the hell are we talking about here?
Wait a second. I want to bring this around, though. I want to bring this around to games because I have a legitimate question.
All right, bring it around, Chris. Swing it around.
My question is, do you guys believe that a market like that exists in the gaming industry? You know, are we talking about your Senzars and your Battlelords of the 23rd century type people? Does that kind of thing really exist? Is there a Bush League for RPGs?
Well, the obvious answer here is going to offend a lot of people, but I'm just going to go ahead and say it and then explain it to hopefully blunt the wrath here.
I'll just say it.
The indie market is your...
Actually, I was going to say probably the PDF market.
Well, that's part of the indie market.
But can you really say the indie market is that?
Yes, for one reason. And this is what I want to explain for people start frothing. I'm not saying that indie games are bad or cheap.
No, you're saying they suck and you hate America.
What I am saying is that they require a lot less to produce. That if I wanted to go make a $300 million movie, I'm not saying they're cheap as in they're shoddy. They are in some cases, at least. But what I am saying
that.
But what I'm saying is that
Dan at feartheboot.com.
If you want to go produce a $300 million summer blockbuster, and you need
$300 million.
Yeah, or you need to be so famous and powerful you can convince somebody to spot you $300 million, as opposed to if I want to make a $50,000 art house flick.
Well,
that's a lot more feasible. And the indie market's the same way, that you can go out into the indie market and you can try and do a lot of different things.
I don't know if it's like that.
Well, I think it is. And
I don't know.
We're talking about individuals' tastes. And so, you know, there's got to be. I don't know what I'm saying.
Who's going to be more experimental? Who's going to be willing to take a risk more? You? Because that's what an indie game company can be. It isn't always, but that's what it could be. Or Wizards of the Coast. And of course, the answer is you. Because you can get in there with a relatively small budget, try something out, and if it doesn't work, you might be out a small business loan, you might not be out anything. Whereas Wizards of the Coast has a lot more in that fight and a lot more on the line, and they have a lot more suits involved, and as a result, they're not going to experiment. Now, the upside to that is they're always going to fall pretty consistently within this kind of little narrow arc, but just is not going to go a whole lot worse, they're not going to go a whole lot better. And so you get kind of a broader spread.
I can feel the 4E people coming in saying, no, they took a big chance with 4E.
Well, I know.
Or they ruined it.
I've just come to accept that after saying what I have about the indie market such there, somebody or several somebodies are going to hear me saying the name of their favorite game or game company and
just blah.
Yeah.
I think they did take a chance. I don't think they did take a big chance with 4E.
Well, I did.
I don't think so either. But I think a lot of people are going to come in and say, well, 4E is totally different and it's either bad or good. You know, and then they'll start in on the rant of, you know, blah, 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 4E is great. 4E is bad. You know,
well, this is something that we were kind of hitting on earlier in the beginning of this tangent.
Before she threw a drink in our face.
Yeah. Are you guys saying that you have to do some time in the indie market before you can go up to, quote, the big show in one of the major publishers?
No, but I'm saying some people do. I think in the same way that we just talked about, there are some people that prefer remaining in the small film industry. Sure. Now, we talked about B-movies, but it doesn't have to be B-movies. You could go watch one of these art flicks that has all kind of stuff going on, you know, all literary devices and this, that, and the other, and may in some ways be a better movie than the summer blockbusters. But, and that's where somebody wants to stay because they don't like the pressure, they don't like the formula, and so they want to stick there. Now,
they do it for art's sake.
But at the same time, a lot of the products that come out of there are just cheap, low budget things from people that either don't care or are just trying to get noticed to move up to the big leagues. And I absolutely think the same thing is going on in the RPG market. Hmm. I know there are some people out there that prefer doing experimental games, that like being their own boss. And I also know, because I've talked to them, there are people out there putting out homemade PDFs in hopes of a major company noticing them, picking them up.
Yeah. Picking up their work or picking up them as a person?
Maybe both, depending on the person, but
I'll relent and I'll agree with you in general on this one. I can see that.
I mean, would I call this like the training league? I mean, no, because like I said, some people are really there and to do their own thing and have made a real art form out of it, and that's fine. But certainly there is less money involved both in the production and in the ultimate sales figures of most indie games.
Yeah, I think I'll have to agree with you there where kind of from the point of, do you have to do indie games? Do you have to self-publish? Do you have to do your own thing? If you want a job with the big role-playing game companies, no, you don't. But what are you going to do? Sit around on your hands and do nothing until you say, I'm not going to print anything until I get a paycheck.
Well, Sarah, you can sit there and endlessly send in submission packets to a major company, hoping they take a chance on you, who's
you
nobody.
You and 10,000 other people.
Yeah, you and 10,000 other guys, and maybe they will, maybe they won't. They probably won't. And so the indie market gives you a great outlet for your
creative
endeavors.
It's like what they say about Hollywood, is that few are called, many answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what you had dreams of, wasn't it, Chris? You wanted to be the actor. Did you want to be a stage actor or a film actor?
Actually, I wanted to be film or TV. Mm. Man, was that a mistake. I mean, clearly I have a radio face, so I shouldn't have done that in the first place.
You have boyish good looks. What are you talking about?
Oh, thank you.
When you shave.
Thank you. I clean up real good.
We should put a picture of him up on the forum.
Oh, I will. I've got one.
Yeah, okay, we have a special picture.
There's going to be a forum contest for this picture.
If you have some Photoshop foo skills, check out the forum in the next couple of days.
Chris made the mistake of making a face at us over a webcam, and it's going to become a forum contest. Actually, if you've never visited our forum, stop by at feartheboot.com. Mm-hmm. There's a forum link at the top there. It's a good community out there.
We have a really excellent community. Yeah, total segue away from all this, I have to say that I want to give a shout out to our forum community. They are a great bunch of people. They are absolutely fantastic, great conversations. We have great regular posters. We have great people who just, you know, occasionally throw out one or two posts. It's just a nice, very friendly forum. And we have a couple of rules, not very many, basically no religion, no politics, and everybody gets along. It's great.
Yeah. No religion, no politics, no porn. That's basically it. So
I know Pat was really disappointed. He was reticent about joining podcasts when we told him that no porn on the forums.
Yeah, that was almost the deal breaker.
Yeah.
I'm glad you overcame it.
So while we're on this topic of movies, let me ask you guys another question. This is a conversation. It's really esoteric. So I may have to explain it a little bit. But in our history of gaming, this is a conversation that I know Chad and I have. We might have had it with a third person as well. And the question goes something like this. What is gaming like? Okay, now I realize gaming's its own art form. It's not exactly like anything else. But when I run a game, there's a certain structure to how I write the plot and how I see it playing out. For example, we played under one game master who, to him, games were like movies. There were scenes, there were kind of chapters to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't mean chapters like a book, maybe like chapters like a DVD chapter. He would see cutscenes that, yeah, you know, we'd role play for a while, and he would even describe to us these theatrical cutscenes. Like, okay, so we fade out on that shot, and then we see the outside of the space station, and it's coming across a planet.
And he even did out of character stuff where he's like, you know, he didn't actually have to tell us, we kind of knew, but it was assumed that he does a cutscene and it's the bad guy talking to his henchmen about his evil
plans.
Which
is something we as the characters never knew.
Never knew.
Yeah. But he was teasing information to the audience, which was the players. And so to him,
I always thought it was a great style.
The whole thing was like a movie. When I run Transformers, I actually run it somewhat like a TV show, not the Transformers TV show itself, but there are...
that was really bad.
Yeah, it was. But there are episodes to it that tie into a plot arc. I run Star Trek the same way. But in most games, to me, it's like a novel. There's a definite beginning, a middle, and end. There's kind of an over arc to the whole thing where it slowly builds up to a single climax that then, you know, plays down to an epilogue that kind of tells you how everything ends. And the whole thing is structured very much like a novel to me.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, when you guys run a game, what is the story of a game most like to you?
I don't know how I could define, maybe if I describe it, you guys could tell me. To me, if I were just to encapsulate how I kind of think out a game and how I portray a game, what I try and do, it's a series of plot hooks and cliffhangers. And that I'm trying to get you to go in a direction without forcing you in that direction.
I would call that almost like a television series sort of approach,
where it's more like, so it's more, not encapsulated episodes,
yeah,
but
or even a, like a comic book type of a metaphor, as opposed to like Dan's single novel.
Well,
type
or maybe
of
something
a,
like
of
an anthology.
Movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Something like that. But some, I mean, if you've got just the mere mention of a cliffhanger to me means that, you know, you're going to be doing this and this. So that, and that's what you kind
of like
see in
each event
in
to
ongoing.
Be a plot hook that hooks the players in. And makes them want to come to that plot point. And then every time I end a game, I really try to end it on the biggest cliffhanger I could think of.
I like that.
To me, Chad, actually, what sounds to me like you're describing that your games are like webisodes where they're short little things, you know, in a sense that it's here's this little nugget. There's a lot of activity. And then, it ends on a cliffhanger, making you want to come back next week for the next webisode.
I see that. Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I would have to say mine are like webisodes.
Except for the word webisode, I can maybe sign on to this. Yeah, that is.
Well, yeah.
As well as words, it does not need to exist.
Yeah, I watched.
I'm just a messenger, man. I didn't make the
I know, great.
I like the, like the Battlestar Galactica has a bunch of those. I've watched all of them. I thought they were pretty good. And then I've watched all the Heroes ones. Those are pretty good. Except for the one about soccer. I didn't bother with that.
What about you, Chris?
You know, I would actually say mine is either like a television miniseries or a television series like Lost, in the sense that...
Nobody knows what's going on?
Nobody knows what's going
on.
For
some
reason,
we can't switch channels.
Yeah, and you leave the table with more questions, asking more questions than what was
answered.
Watching
the plane wreck is like watching a train wreck.
Yeah. Everybody's going, who moved my island?
No, And what I mean by that is, in the sense that with a miniseries, there's, at least this is how I try to do them, there's a definite beginning, there's a definite middle, and there's a definite end to it. There is a conclusion. And I say Lost because, in the sense that, yes, the show started, but after a few years into it, the creators came out and said, here is the fact that there will be a definite ending, this will be it. And that's kind of how I like to run it, and my last campaign that I ran, I told them there will be an end to this, and it will not just going to keep going on forever and ever and ever. And in a certain way, a couple of the players who are very much like fans said, you know, it sure would be nice if we could, you know, keep this going. It'd be really good to keep this going. I'm like, no, there's an end, and that's it. And in the game I'm currently running, they don't know it yet because we haven't talked about it, but there is a definite end I see on the horizon, and it's there. And how the individual sessions run, that varies. There isn't always necessarily a cliffhanger. or you know, that big gotcha moment or anything like that. There can be, and there have been, but in general, if I have an endpoint and it's time to go, I end it, time to go, knowing that they're going to come back next week for the next episode.
Whether there's a cliffhanger or not, this is what they do on Saturdays or whatever.
Right. Yeah, and the reasoning behind that is that as long as I've got them invested enough in the story of what's going on, they're going to cut me slack for when it doesn't end exciting, you know, and so that, this is such a good story, I want to come back next week and participate and see what happens.
Pat's games are all like Kabuki theater. Moving on to the next topic. So, Chris, you're struggling with your current gaming group, I hear.
I am struggling a little bit with my current gaming group.
Do you have an answer to this?
No, I don't. Well, because like you said, I only ran the one game, and
it was like Kabuki theater.
It was okay. My name was Coco.
You know, but let me ask you this though, Pat. You're being you being more of a player, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. What is your preference? Player.
That's true. Do you like their? For example, do you like there to be a definitive end?
Well,
do you like to have knowledge your character shouldn't have, little cutscenes?
Okay, I can talk to that. As I've said before, my original experience in role-playing was long-standing campaigns, two different campaigns that never ended, you know, the never-ending campaigns, whatever you want to call it. But until I moved up to here and started playing with the groups here in St. Louis, mainly, you know, this group, I had never played games that were started and meant to end in X number of sessions, and then you would rotate around. That was totally new to me. And it was cool because it's a new experience. I like to try new gaming experiences, and so I like that. And actually, your idea, I've never actually played in a game where, like what Dan said, they had sort of the cutscenes and you had this, you know, you were seeing this knowledge a la television or movie-esque idea. I think that's pretty cool. I think that's neat. As long as you've got a good enough group of players that can separate that player knowledge from character knowledge. I'm always really big about that. In fact, and actually it came up in this weekend's game, that we played on Sunday. I was actually getting upset with some of our play and the fact that we were in a situation where we were doing something at the moment and all of our characters or a couple of the characters were wanting to sit and discuss what we were going to do. I'm like, you can't do that right now. We're talking to the guy. The clock's ticking. We can't just have a sidebar.
Right.
So I'm kind of big about that. I guess maybe I've sort of gotten to that more recently.
You want the game to be sort of segregated. It's like the sidebar and the discussion is fine when we're having it. But right. When we're role playing, let's
role play. I mean, we should have talked about this beforehand or we need to talk about it afterwards. You just don't.
I don't like to
disrupt the flow of the game.
You know, that's one way in which I see my games being more like novels, in that I'm very interested in what characters are thinking.
Uh-huh.
And you, if we put aside the whisper thoughts of Dune, you generally don't get that in a movie,
true.
But you can get that in a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Pat, I got to kind of commend you in a certain way, almost behaving like a GM as being a player.
Uh-huh.
You know, you kind of acted like a little cop there and kind of kept him in
you
line.
Snitch.
I am. Yeah, it was just, I do. I sort
of did tell Dave to shut up, too, during role playing.
That's true.
You know, Dan, your mention of the little cutscenes and stuff, just like Pat, I've never A, tried that, or B, experienced that myself, you know, to see, you know, how something like that would work. I'd be actually very curious to try that kind of style just to see what it's like.
I think it would take some practice. I mean, if you've got a GM that can pull it off well, I think it'd be really neat. But I think it's one of those things where you've got to have some experience with it to do it well, just like with anything. I guess to sort of answer the questions, I like both styles. I enjoy the long-standing campaigns because I'm one of those that I hate for anything to end. Like I'm especially that way with, say, a series of books. If there's a finite series, you know, finite number of books in a series, I hate reading the last book, and I'm one of those type of people that I'll put it off. I purposely won't read it as quickly as it comes out because I don't want it to end. So there's that part of me as well.
You know, I'm kind of that way myself, but I find though as time goes on, I'm appreciating more this series or shows or whatever that or books even that end in a way that I think is worthwhile. You know, not to get too much into TV, but The Shield just recently ended, and quite honestly, I'd have to say that probably was the best series finale that I've ever seen, wherein almost every character in there ended in a way that I felt made complete and utter sense to me, and I was very satisfied with the ending. you know, and thinking, I was thinking for the worst, that the worst could happen. And in a certain way that did, but it was all, it still came out in a very good way. And so I have a lot of appreciation for things that end, you know, properly.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I like things that when you say they're planned to end, it's good. What I hate, especially in, well, it could, in a television series, but it can also be in a game setting, is things that end unexpectedly and unplanned. It's just that it sort of falls apart and it ends without a well-structured ending. That's disappointing as a player, you know, or mm-hmm. as a viewer, whatever, you know.
So, Chris, yes. The check cashed. So go ahead and tell me about your gaming group.
The check cashed. Yeah. Here's my current dilemma. You know, and this kind of relates back to what we were talking about a couple episodes ago about role-playing and, you know, appropriate levels of things before it gets into the whole LARPing thing. But my current group, great bunch of guys. I'm enjoying playing with them. I was really struggling in the beginning few sessions, and I think that's part of the reason why it took so long for us to kind of get going. Because I sit down, you know, and I've got this loose overarching plot going on, and I've got... You know, as a group of characters, they've kind of coalesced into something, and I'm about to really hit them some more with some good background information to kind of get them going. But as personalities or as characters themselves, they're just not cutting it. They just haven't been. I haven't seen any development of any real personality. There's like little glimmers within a couple of the players, but in general, it's all pretty flat. They don't really engage as characters, and I've done a little self-examination to see, am I not giving them the opportunity to do this? And so I thought in my last session, we'll try this. And the last session was pure RP. There was very, very little dice rolling. And I really poured on the NPCs that they encountered. I made sure that all of them were very, in a certain way, eccentric, had a definite personality, and gave them things that they could engage with if they wanted to come out and be, you know, PCs essentially, instead of just players with, you know, paper in front of them. And it just wasn't working. And I'm kind of almost in a certain way at a loss for how to draw them out or draw out a little bit of character. I've debated with giving them role-playing XP awards and then verbally giving them those awards in front of the other players and telling them why, you know, but I'm hesitant to do that because I don't want to create any kind of conflict. You know, or I don't want to create any negative pressure, making them. I don't want to force them to role play.
I see a bigger problem there in that if I have a group that's hesitant to role play, I would not do XP rewards for role playing for the simple reason that with most people,
you would do heavy handed punishment for not role playing.
With most people that aren't role playing, it's because they feel uncomfortable.
They don't know that they're supposed to. Like,
well, maybe
if you have a brand new group of role players, people who aren't really familiar with the concept, I mean, this is not skills you're born with. It's,
well, right, and also it's just not a sort of art form that you're used to, and so people feel uncomfortable. And I'd be afraid if I start handing out role playing awards that I'd basically be stopping the game and drawing attention, putting the spotlight on the guy who just barely worked up the nerve to do it in the first place.
Well, you could do it. Doesn't have to be a big deal. You could wait until the end of the game and say, okay, that was a great game, guys. You know, hey, Bob, I like how you interacted with that town guard. You know, the one that they actually didn't kill and the one that they actually carried on a conversation with, that Bob was leading the conversation. You say, you know, it's like, hey, Bob, you know, you did a really good job with that, you know, NPC guard talking to him and talking your way past him. Give yourself X number of extra XP and leave it at that and don't mention it and see if they get the hint over the and do it every single game. You know, even if you're getting near the end of a game session and nobody's done it yet, force it, kind of just force it a little with somebody.
And also set
and
it.
Then at the end, say, hey, good role play. And then kind of set that, give them rewards to do that.
Also set an example. Put yourself out there.
Definitely.
Do it. Role play yourself.
Take your pants off.
Yeah. Even if they're not biting, keep trying. Just keep pushing on. Because you can't ask them to do something you're not going to do.
And also, I think that it would really help if a game, you know, you have a whole group like this. And the game master, before the game starts, or even after, you know, the game's been going on for a little while, set the expectation level.
like before the game starts one session, just say, and you have to be careful with this because I would absolutely hate it if I was a player in the situation and suddenly the game master came off as chastising, where you don't want to sound like, well, guys, we need some role playing if we really want to make this fun. And it's no. Say something to the effect of, you know, we need to get more into character. And I think that this is some ways that we can do that. You know, I could make my NPCs do a little bit more like this, even though you're already doing that. And, you know, you guys can come back and you guys can do a little bit more interaction. I want you guys to know is that you don't have to murder every single person you see. You know, and also you can confront them, too, so to speak, and start asking them the whys. Like, why is your character doing that? Maybe not when they do something like that, but in a conversational sort of way. Like when there's a smoke break, you know, so-and-so did this and it was a moderately can be considered role-playing or whatever. You can say, well, you know, Joe, why did you do that? Why did your character do that? It's like, oh, I don't know. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Like, no. Your character is like this and he's like this and, you know, he just told off the king and, you know, why'd your character do it? Well, he was angry. Well, why was he angry? Try to get them.
But yeah, just try and find out that motivation, make them see the motivation as to why they did that. What you're trying to do is
not even find out the information because you don't care. The goal is the role playing, not the why. The why is their problem. You want them to start thinking along those lines.
An idea that I had would be also something you could do, and you may already do this, I don't know, but any opportunity that you have with them that you would interject, you know, the role playing in yourself. And I guess what I mean by that is like, take any opportunity you can to have an NPC engage them in conversation. They say, okay, we're going to go talk to the sheriff instead of just saying, getting the information. As soon as they walk in, you just, you know, you role play the sheriff, say, well, howdy boys, what can I do for you? You know, you start talking to them in that sort of,
Does the sheriff have a gun?
Howdy boys, drop your pants.
Can I go for my gun quicker?
Yeah.
Yes.
So Chris,
you're trying to engage them in conversation and hopefully they'll run with it. And then I would say if they do start talking to you and, you know, conversing with your NPCs, run with it as long as you can. Keep doing that with them because then they'll get more and more used to it. You know, go beyond what you really needed to do. Get into the small talk of it just because it's inane, but it might help them to start doing that. And Chris, I was going to ask, I'm assuming, is this a newer group or is this an existing group that's in a slump, that's having problems now?
It's a newer group. And here's just a little of the dynamics. Basically it's a father who's a little bit older than me and he has two roughly 20 year aged sons. And then it's like two of their friends and then one of the dad's friends. So, I mean, it's a good sized group and they all know each other. So they're all very familiar with each other, without a doubt. And their general experience level, they haven't played in a couple of years. So they're just getting back into it. But on top of that, not being one who plays these, I'm not sure exactly how much of an impact this has. But kind of as a family, the dad and the two sons do a lot of WoW together. So knowing that there's not necessarily a lot of RP in there, my wonderment is, are they going into this with a certain level of expectations of, you know, a certain amount of combat that's supposed to be there? You know, we did talk about in the initial thing, I asked them, do you guys want to do just stuff where it's lots of action, lots of dice rolling, or do you want something that has an overarching story to it? You know, what do you want? And they did. They wanted something with story in there, so I thought, okay, this is good. And to be fair to them, there are a couple of areas where I didn't follow through and do some of my, you know, I guess my DM due diligence, if you want to look at it that way. We haven't fully developed their character backgrounds yet, which may be part of the problem, but yet at the same time, you know, the stuff that you described, Pat, that is essentially what I did in the last session, and, you know, there wasn't a lot coming back. And to go to a point that you made, Dan, keeping at it and really keeping that role playing up on my end, it is difficult to do that because with any kind of creative endeavor, and you guys, I'm sure, are very well aware of this, when you're role playing and you get good role playing back from somebody, it makes it much easier for you to continue to do good role playing. You know, if it's just me doing the role playing and I'm not getting any reciprocal energy coming back, it's very difficult to try and keep that up.
Well, Chris, I don't know if I'd quite be so bold suggesting that you switch campaigns, but if their background's in WoW and you're struggling getting them to roleplay, you might want to get out of fantasy.
Is D&D really the answer?
I mean, now if they're not okay with the idea of role playing. I'd say, yeah, D&D may be a good bridge because it's similar to WoW. But if the issue here is that they're big into WoW and maybe they're carrying a little bit too much of that over into the game, I'd get out of fantasy. I'd go for a science fiction game or a
World
modern
of darkness.
Yeah, a modern horror game
I would say something that's very rules light and
something
really
where they're
about like an indie game. The character generation is all about the who's, the what's, the why's.
Yeah,
the
something where they can't fall into patterns. So
yeah.
You know, that is actually a good point. And one of the, I know that I'm purposely making the campaign I'm purposely making it short so that, because I have an own personal desire, you know, I'm looking at the stuff on my shelves now. I want to play Deadlands again. I'd like to play Shadowrun again. And I want to try that on them and throw that kind of curveball at them, you know. And so, and I think that they would have an interest to do that. But, you know, that's a really good point. And something I hadn't thought of about just, you know, flat out just dropping it. But it's worth it to bring up. It's something that I, in all the years that I've gamed, I never really have done that. You know, even in stuff that we were doing in my old groups, if we were doing it and getting kind of burnt out on it, we would usually try and see it through before we'd switch to something. Or we'd have something else going on at the time to maybe help to lessen that sting.
Yeah, and I think, except for when I first started role-playing, I've had the lucky fortune of always having some veteran role-players in any group I've ever been in, and I think that helps. Obviously, I don't think that's really something that you have with this group, but, you know, for others that are out there, I think having at least one or two people around that have been doing this, that really helps, because those can be the ones, they're sort of the role models that can help that along. And if you
see, and I don't really think that particular thing doesn't really exist at the table.
It's not going to help you, but, you know, just for further discussion, I think, you know,
maybe therein lies an answer. Do you have a stoolie you could bring in who would kind of raise the bar there a little bit, give you somebody to role play with so they'd see what they're supposed to be doing?
Easily, not easily accessible. I don't.
Well, what about the saint of gaming, your wife?
You know, this would be a group that she probably would feel comfortable sitting in with because of the fact that they're just getting into the rule, you know, getting back into things. And so she would feel skill-wise on par with them. But as a role player, actually, in the past, she's actually done pretty
and
well.
You've asked so much of her in the past to ask one more thing. I mean, it'd be shameful, but hey, you're Chris Hussey. So.
But that's true. She is the patron saint of Hussies.
So. Yeah.
related to that, you know, bringing in that one of the thoughts, and we had kind of talked about this too, is, you know, what they had volunteered to jump on the other side of the screen basically and run something once we had all gotten more comfortable with things. And though I prefer to DM, the idea of being a player and being the person there who then can really get into the role playing and then hopefully drag some of them with me, and then in turn force them as a DM to really give me something good back, you know, because I think
might I suggest the rotating DM experiment? I mean, I did it when I came up with that. I did it for the opposite reason. I had decent players who were disrespectful of the not of me, but of the concept of GMing, and they didn't understand it and they took advantage of it. And I did it to force these people to GM so they understood how hard it was.
I'd almost worry about that in Chris's case, because if they aren't getting the concepts quite right, then putting them into GM, you may just actually reinforce their ideas, because now suddenly they're in charge of a game and they'll be creating games that miss what it is Chris is trying to get out of the experience. So,
yeah, I
think a skilled player, at least a skilled RPer, when the GM is in kind of a rookie situation, you know, a skilled RPer in the sense that they're good role players, but they're also smart players in the sense they're not going to, you know, overpower and bully. I think that you can walk that line and in a certain way, you know, subtly coach a little bit this DM and even your surrounding players that this is actually a decent way to play. This is a decent way to go at it.
Yeah.
Without intimidating or overpowering.
Well, and I think Dan just said something that kind of threw up a red flag. It's like you said something about making sure that Chris gets the experience that he wants. Well, you also have to balance that with getting the experience that the other players want too. And that doesn't mean changing them. I mean, you want to change them a little bit, but you really have to see what are the players trying to get out of that. And you have You want to influence them.
That's true.
But you also want to change yourself a little bit, too, so that everybody's kind of having fun.
That's true. Maybe when you ask them about an overarching story, that what they meant is they just wanted some kind of narrative to the killing, mm-hmm. or whatever the case is.
That's a dungeon crawl.
And
treasure,
maybe that kind of the implied statement there, if you were asking about role-playing, they didn't get. And as a result, there may be a completely different experience they're trying to get out of this game.
It sounds like...
Well, you know, and that's very true, because when I gave them, you know, quote-unquote, these two or three options, and they said, yeah, you know, the story thing sounds good, I went at it from my perception as what I perceive to have an overarching story be, where it is this, you know, there are times when it's just RP, and there are times when, yeah, you're going to roll a lot of dice and not really going to do much in character.
Yeah.
But yeah, they may have be looking at it as, oh, this is essentially just a mission.
Yeah.
Here's your, you know, quote unquote, the background mission, just go and kill stuff.
It sounds to me like all this advice we're throwing out, it sounds to me like you just need to do a couple of really basic things. And I think, I hope that this could also help other people who are listening. It's just not the let's rag on Chris hour here, but I think that A, you need to pull your players together and not have a game and just say, what do you guys want? What do I want? And let's define some terms here. So, you know, what is role playing? What is a story? What do you mean by an overarching storyline? Because I think when you have that conversation, you might start to find that they have different definitions of the same words that you do. And the second thing I think you need to do is, once you get that all cleared up, is maybe take Dan's advice of maybe D&D is not quite the right playground for this. Maybe switch over to a different system. And then the third thing I would suggest is, you said that you didn't focus enough on the character background stories and write-ups and stuff like you should have. Those are the fundamentals. Those are the basics. You are failing at this because you did not do your homework, Chris. You did not make homework.
You are absolutely right. And really, I do accept some of the responsibility for that, because I've talked about it before. There's always this base 20 questions I have these people ask, and I haven't had them do that yet. And that's really kind of my own. Yeah, that's my own fault.
Because remember, with
part of what's happening is definitely, you know, is on me.
Because remember, the point of, like you said, the 20 base questions about the character, a character survey packet, a character questionnaire, it is not to get the information from them. The information about their character is irrelevant. I mean, maybe you could harvest plot ideas out of it later, but the primary focus is to get them to think about their character when they're filling it out. That is the point and purpose of it. Maybe you can use that information later on, but yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and it's interesting for me. For as long as I've been gaming, this is really a situation I haven't really had encountered over the course of a long-term basis. And I'm not counting convention times when I've either, or times when I've done maybe a table with just new people. I can't really count that. But with players that I would consider to be long-standing players, this is really a new situation for me, because my older groups, we all were on the same vibe, and they RP'd, and they, you know, they got into character, and they had all these interesting little quirks and idiosyncrasies about the characters, but you know, these guys haven't quite gotten there yet. They're just
Chris, I had a similar situation with you, where I had a group of people who really never played before, and you know, there were some struggles. And one thing I learned from this is, don't try to recreate past glories. Don't try to make this, I used to have this great group back in the day, and now I have these new people, and I can remake this great group, and it's going to be just like it was. It'll never be like it was. What you want to do is, you want to create new glories. You want to create new stories and new experiences with these people that have different definitions of what success is. It's not raising or lowering a bar. It's setting a whole new bar. And that's kind of my personal advice to you.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, and I'm not, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm being unfair to them by comparing them to the last group, but it's
you
just,
are.
It is a
you're,
different.
You're basically looking at them and saying, why can't you be more like Big Brother?
That's right. Why can't you be like them? No, but it is a different group with a different set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's really getting used to that and getting, you know, comfortable in that situation.
Chris, I feel like you and I need to hug.
Actually, you know, it's kind of funny, because I do feel like you guys, I feel like this kind of have turned into a Dear Abby sort of thing, but there's, But there is some there's some solid advice out of here and some reminders, even that as someone who considers themselves an experienced role player, looking back at indeed some of those fundamentals mm-hmm. and seeing how important that they are, and how as much as you want to just dive right in and start rolling dice, is that that's not necessarily always the best course of action to take.
Right.
It's a little short-term pain to hold off a session or two before you really start to lay that good foundation.
It's always about, you know, baby steps. It's all like when you have a new group of new players or you haven't role-played in a really long time, you can't set that bar too high. You have to like go into it in baby steps, and maybe a few baby steps in, you realize you're going too slow and you kick up the speed. Maybe you realize, hey, you know, we need to kind of take it easy and build back up. It takes time to get into character. It takes time for people to get comfortable with each other.
I was willing to pursue this topic in an episode because I think it's fairly archetypical. Everyone has either been in this situation or will be in the situation of the more experienced player in a less experienced group,
mm-hmm.
or someone who has a history with one group who wants to recreate past experiences with the current group. And you've got to accept that there are some tricks for doing that to an extent. And there also comes a point where, Chad, as you said, you just got to accept these aren't those people. They may not even want those experiences. And even if they do, they may not be able to recreate them because they're not the same people in the same time.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And it's what's good to remember is that there's always something new. There's always mm-hmm. something to be learned on both sides of the table. You know, if you're a veteran game master, you can still run into a situation like this where you haven't had this happen before. And hey, that's actually, in a way, it's really good because it's a challenge. It's something new. You know, you've got to work at it, and hopefully it will improve you as a game master and the group that you're running with and make them better players. So.
Yeah. Well, cool. Chris, maybe we will get a follow-up from you then some weeks in the future. As for the rest of you guys, thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.